Back in on Canuck Central here in the Kintec studio. This hour of Canuck Central is brought to you by your Lower Mainland Boston Pizza. Every Vancouver hockey game gets $5 pints of Molson Canadian or Coors Light, plus weekly prize giveaways all season long at your local Lower Mainland Boston Pizza. Chester on Twitter saying, Reach is on Team Miller. I'm on Team Figure It Out.
Figure It Out.
Because you need both of them. That should be obvious at this point. Let's bring in our next guest. It is Landon Ferraro joining us. Canucks analyst joins us every single Thursday here on Canucks Central. What's happening, Landon?
Not a whole lot, guys. How are we doing?
Sifting through Canucks discourse as usual, coming off of a loss. I mean, it seems like fans live the wins and losses of an NHL season almost as hard as the team actually does.
Honestly, in some points, they wear it harder. And that's not saying the guys don't care, but it's easier to let go when you're in it and you can just get back into the fire and you're the one putting the effort in. It's different if you're sitting there waiting to see what the response is going to be.
Yeah, and I think, you know, when we talk about, passion and intensity and wanting to make a difference, and that play last night in overtime got a lot of talk from JT. Miller extends his shifts, and instead of going off, he wheels around Hughes and tries to make a audacious play to Garland, doesn't go off, and next thing you know, the puck goes the other way, and they end up losing in overtime. What do you make of that decision, and a player like JT trying to force the issue like he did?
I don't know. I feel like a guy that has that good of a track record, especially in overtime, can get some leniency. And it's one of those things, if that lands on Garland's tape and ends up, if it gets there, it's got a good chance of going in. Again, there's no issue, right? Like, it's 3-on-3. It's almost over, and you're going into a shootout, which the shootout is what it is. I'm not a big fan of it, but I'd rather a guy take a chance at the end of overtime trying to get the point right then.
Yeah, and JT had a bit of a loud game overall. And of course, with the way that the power play deployment is ongoing, there's questions about the dynamic between Pettersson and Miller that have continued to pop up, which we've talked about it a ton. It's obviously something that the fan base is really into right now. But as I said off the top here, like, at some point you've just got to figure it out, because ultimately the best version of the Vancouver Canucks is with both of these players playing at their best level. I was just talking to Bick off air, and he mentioned, Washington, they figured it out through all of their ups and downs with Ovi and Backstrom. Even Sid and Gino, after their first cup, there was that long break in between cups, and they had lots of questions about, do they have to trade one of Sid or Gino? And ultimately, what was the answer? Keeping both of your great players, because that's usually the best answer, figuring out how to get the most out of both of them.
Yeah, and I would say that at the end of the day, you got to be an adult and you just learn to work with it. If that's actually what's going on and there's an issue there, at the end of the day, you'd like to think, if I'm one of them, I know the other one's going to help me and the team be better. So we need to figure it out. And I don't think that it's something that, if you're having to separate them and do, and it's this massive thing, then that's a real big issue. But I don't think there's a way that you don't get this figured out. And I don't think the guys wouldn't want that either. They're both exceptional players that can make your job easier. Why would you not just have that figured out as quickly as possible here?
Yeah, and we talked so much, Landon, about getting the best out of these two guys, and as far as dynamics as well goes. And we looked at the team last year, and we talked so much about what Ian Cole and Zadorov brought defensively for the group, but as far as also two guys that are big personalities, veterans, that have been around, not afraid of poking fun at anybody, and can kind of also break the ice very good in a room. Do you think missing guys like that could be big, especially when you're going through some struggles like they have been at times this year?
Yeah, and that's why when you're constructing a team, you can't just look at what they are on the ice. You have to know how they work in the room, what type of person they are. Sometimes you need to find someone that's a bit louder, that can, you know, loosen the room up, because, you know, sometimes you get a bunch of very serious guys and you need someone to remind them to have some fun once in a while and take a breath. And then on the flip side, you know, if you got a younger team, you generally want a couple older serious guys to help that along. Like, it's a real ecosystem in there that can be touchy at points, but at the end of the day, like, everyone shows up to training camp and the whole goal is to have the best team possible, and a big part of that is being able to work with people that you have issues with time, you know, sometimes, and be able to push past that. Like, it's normal life. As much as it's an NHL dressing room, like, it's normal life. Like, there's issues that pop up and you have to work your way through them.
Yeah, and I feel like hockey fans and even us too in the media, like, ultimately the guys who know most about what's actually going on are the players on the team, because they're the only ones that are actually in that room and living through these situations. They're the ones that know how bad or how not bad something might be, and locker room dynamics can be very much like your office dynamics. Maybe there's some loud and some not so loud, leaders by example, all different kinds of things.
Yeah, and also you have, from year to year, even if it's the exact same group back, something that wasn't an issue before or was an issue is the reverse the next year, right? Like, you have to figure it out year in and year out, because there is changes and people change, yeah. And you have to be able to work through those things. But again, like, it's their jobs, it's their careers. Like, you know, guys want to win, but you have to also, like, guys want to have the best possible career. You can only play for so mm-hmm. long that you can't have wasted time because of drama, really.
Yeah.
Like, it's there's no time for it.
Yeah, and I think, you know, as far as, you know, where the team goes, it's going to be really interesting to see what happens trade-wise. Obviously, they want to improve the team, and maybe it is a bit more delicate than just getting the best player. Maybe it's also about getting the best player that can also be the best fit in the room.
For sure. There's guys that, you know, I've played with through my career that, and it, honestly, it's generally the guys that don't play a ton and are in and out of the lineup that are the biggest people in the dressing room. Like, they create the most noise. They're the ones that are always making sure things are organized for guys to make sure they have, you know, different events to go do together and activities. Like, they're the ones, there's a reason they're called glue guys. Like, they literally do hold the team together, because they know that, yeah, I might not be out there 25 minutes, but I still have, you know, my 8 to 10 minutes that I play, and I'm the person that makes sure that the team's functioning together, you know, very well outside of the ice.
We've got some listeners asking about your time coming up into the league, and you show up with the Detroit Red Wings as a strapping young 22-year-old with guys like Alfredson and Zetterberg and Datsyuk in the room there in Detroit. I mean, it had to have been intimidating your first time through. I mean, what was it like as a young player coming into that with so many, like, legends of the game on that team?
I mean, it's intimidating for sure, but at the same time, all those guys did such a good job at training camp, and when we'd be around, sticking around for preseason and, you know, kind of all that, that you knew that, you know, in no way did I think I went in there and all of a sudden, you know, hey, I got 20 new best friends. We're all like, this is perfect now. But, you know, I knew that if I had something I had to ask or anything like that, I could go up to anyone, and they were awesome. And that's how, you know, that's another part of building a team, is making sure that you have everyone in there that will be able to help, will be willing to help, because you need your older guys to help out the young guys. It's a lot that comes at you when you first come into the league, and mm-hmm. you're just trying to get your feet under you. But, you know, in their dressing room at that time, it was quieter. It was very, I don't want to say calm, because you could tell that there was passion behind everything that was being said between periods and stuff, but it was a very chilled, you know, veteran way of looking at the game, where if it was a bunch of guys my age, there'd probably be a lot more yelling, you know, trying to get your point across as right. You're going along.
Getting it back to on the ice, and last night, one of the big reasons all this, you know, Pettersson JT stuff kicked up again was the head coach, going from taking JT off the first power play unit against Colorado to taking Pettersson off the first power play unit against Utah. What do you make of that decision and the back and forth, and what do you think the coach is trying to accomplish with that?
Well, I mean, I can kind of make sense of taking JT off and putting him on the other unit, because while he was out, that power play unit was doing pretty well. So, you know, if you can make that work and then have JT coming out the next and letting him really be a shooter, like, you know, the idea behind it I get. Once they started, you know, once they moved Pettersson off it and they, you know, kind of went back and forth, I don't know. Like, it's hard because Garland has played so well that you can't, you know, it's you can take him off, but he doesn't deserve to come off. So now you're trying to find another spot, and you know it's difficult. But I mean, eventually you're going to have both those guys and Miller and Pettersson on one unit. Like, you're going to need them clicking for that unit to really take off again.
I guess the one thing that they benefit with having Garland on the top unit, I mean, you know, he's a good playmaker and he's actually pretty good in front of the net with how crafty he can be, with how he gets his stick on pucks and things of that nature. But him and DeBrusk have been both really strong at retrievals, and when you move one of those two guys off the top unit, you lose a little bit of that, and then that's when we see the Canucks end up with a little bit more one and done on the power play. Like, they lose the puck and it's like they can't seem to get it back. It's like one chance and then it's down the ice again.
Yeah, they definitely have struggled with support and puck retrievals on the power play, especially in zone on break-ins. So, like, I totally agree with you. Like, Garland is one of my favorite guys in the league to watch simply around the boards. Like, the way that he can spin and kind of contort himself, and he's so creative with his stick that, you know, he is a hard person to replace. But, you know, if you look back to when the power play was doing well last year as well, like, the guys were a lot more dialed in on retrievals. That went away, as you know, towards the end of the season and playoffs a bit, but you have to be able to go in and support. You have to be able to go in and put your nose into a battle in the corner. You know, and yes, Garland does it so well, but if he can get moved back to that other unit, Pettersson comes back in. Like, it's, again, like, Garland has done nothing to deserve to get moved off, but you need your best players to be on your best power play. Like, they're going to stay out a minute, minute and a half, most likely, every time. So now you have JT or Pettersson now playing 30 seconds of a power play. Like, that's not a winning recipe either.
No, and maybe it is the shakeup or whatever the coach is trying to do, but I'm with you getting all five guys. And on Garland, too, I think he's done so many good things. And even last night on the postgame show, Landon, it was funny. Everybody was getting criticized, and even people criticizing Connor Garland. I'm like, if there's one forward who may be allowed to have a few overly puck dominant moments or overly enthusiastic moments, it is Connor Garland with how he's played, and he doesn't deserve coming off any line or anything. But I'm with you on taking him off the first power play unit, because the other thing is, when he has the puck on the half wall, nobody respects his shot. And it's not that he's a horrible shooter, but the players are looking at it and saying, which threats are we taking away? And they're more than willing to give Connor Garland that shot. And I don't think you can have somebody on the half wall that isn't being respected as a shooter by the penalty killers.
I'd agree, and I would say that's why it looks so much better when JT's back on that side, Pettersson's playing the right flank, because JT does that so well with, you know, he comes off with a bit of pace, and he's coming downhill, and he's able to hit that backdoor play, he's able to get a shot on net that it goes with pace. Like, there's a big difference between shooting the puck from, you know, about the hash marks, or just above them to the tops of the circles, even though that's not that far. Like, that is a big difference on weight of a shot and how, you know, like, I knew I couldn't take a wrist shot standing still from the top of the circle. Like, the goalie could have caught it with his bare hand. Like, I knew I had to be a closer in shooter. And Garland is that. He's, you know, his shot isn't the, you know, the heaviest, but where he's so good is his hands in tight, and, like, get him back, you know, even into the bumper spot of that second unit, or get him around the net a bit. Like, he's so good in tight, and let that kind of show, and then let JT get back to coming downhill and letting that hard snapper go.
Garland led all forwards in ice time last night. He's up to 1938 for this season, which is easily a career high, nearly by 2 minutes on average.
Legs never get tired. Yeah, you can just keep throwing them out there.
Yeah, and with the way some of the bottom of the lineup has played, you know, we've seen Rick Tocchet really limit the minutes of certain players, and Nils Höglander barely gets over 10 minutes last night. We've seen that happen quite a bit. They made the call up for Linus Karlsson and Phil DiGiuseppe. I wonder, given he hasn't scored a point now in, I think it's November 2nd since the last time Höglander was on the score sheet. I wonder if we're getting to a point where he might be sitting in the press box one of these nights, Landon.
Yeah, I mean, you have to think it's, like, if you can only say it's coming for so long, and I definitely have been one of those, like, it's when he gets moving and he's attacking the forecheck, like, you can see all the promise there, but you can only wait for so long. Like, you need to see some production. You know, like, Danton Heinen has had, you know, a tough start to the year through the first quarter, and even he, you know, he's starting to find, not just because, you know, he scored two in the last three, but, like, his game is starting to develop a bit more, and you can see where, you know, the player that they signed is there and it's coming. With Höglander, like, they're just, he doesn't really attack the net. He doesn't seem to get himself into positions to have a chance. And that's where it's scary, when you just don't really see the light at the end of the tunnel with him really right now. And it is tough. Like, you know, I see stuff on Twitter as well, and you always see someone, you know, like, you already know what's going to happen. If they move on, he's going to go somewhere and do pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
And that's okay, though. Like, for whatever reason, that's not working right now. So, I mean, whether it's the press box or they find another way to, you know, instill some more confidence in him, like, it's, you know, a bit of uphill right now.
And as far as the blue line is concerned, you know, for all the criticism and obviously for a lot of the problems the Canucks blue line has had outside of Quinn Hughes, I think one player who's really acquitted himself well recently is Noah Juulsen. What are you seeing in his game that's made a big difference the past, say, 10 or so games?
Well, I mean, he definitely inserts himself into the game, whether it's physically or, you know, on the PK doing a good job. But, you know, the part that I think he's started to get better with over the last little bit here has been, especially on neutral zone turnovers, like, he causes the turnover as the rush is coming at him. Like, it's not just a chip up the boards. He's done it a few times now of, you know, a nice spin away with the puck and hitting the winger on the far side or hitting the guy up the gut. Like, he's starting to be able to make some plays out of it as well. So, I mean, you can just see a guy that's starting to get more comfortable and trusting his ability. You know, I believe the Tocchet quote from a few weeks ago, might have been a month ago now, but as he was starting to turn it on, he's like, he's not worried about coming out of the lineup anymore. Like, he's just playing. And I know that statement and that feeling really well. Like, there is a completely different type of game from when you're just playing free and you trust what's happening to every time you go on, you're like, I am one mistake or one turnover away from maybe not even, you know, not playing tonight, but not playing in this organization again, right? Like, it's hard to play that way. So I feel like he's just kind of settled into his role. He knows that he's doing a good job and just kind of seeing what happens.
Landon, we appreciate the time as always. Thanks for this.
Yep, have a good one, guys.
There is Landon Ferraro joining us here on Canucks Central. We're going to get to Scott Wheeler here in just a few moments. He had a great piece on Canucks prospect Sawyer Mignot, who's headed to the World Junior Championships to play for Team Canada, third-round pick from a couple of years ago. Seems as though the Canucks just let us have Rick Tocchet's availability from today, and he confirmed that Phil DiGiuseppe and Linus Karlsson are coming into the lineup for Nils Höglander and Max Sasson. Derek Forbert will be in for Erik Brännström.
Yeah, I mean, and I know people will be upset that Nils Höglander is not playing, and there'll be criticism. He doesn't have a point in 21 games, hasn't scored a goal in 26 games. I mean, it's
It's been a long time.
Yeah, and you know, he got a chance to play with Miller for a game too, and he's moved up and down the lineup, and I get it, and we can always talk about him getting more chances, but he's now played 31 games without a healthy scratch, and that's a long stretch to go without picking up anything on the bottom line, right? And sometimes you have a bad streak, but like no points. Yeah. Max Sasson has 5 points in 10 games.
Yeah, he's not playing much either.
You know, so, and Sasson's not going to continue scoring at that rate, and he's coming out of the lineup, and he showed really well and promising, but, you know, it's always going to be a process for these young guys, and I wouldn't be surprised if he finds himself back in Abbotsford, but he showed something, obviously, with the time he's played here already, but I don't know if you can actually be upset about Höglander not being in the game tonight. And I'm not even sure it's because he's getting traded or anything. Now, famous last words, there's 7 hours between now and the trade freeze for the Canucks is coming up at midnight. So we'll see if anything happens. But I think this is very much about performance or lack thereof, really.
The game since, it's been 21 games since Nils Höglander's last point. He's averaged 10.34 in those games, is a -4, has 16 penalty minutes, just 14 shots on net in that time. He's played over 13 minutes just 3 times in the entirety of that 21-game stretch. Now, it's on you. You know, he even mentioned it to Coach a while ago. He's got to be better, and we haven't seen his play tick up. We'll dive more into this. Scott Wheeler is going to join us. We'll also get more into the pregame notes as well as we get closer to the Canucks and Vegas Golden Knights. Tonight from Vegas, Canucks on the second half of a back-to-back. That's coming up on the Sportsnet Radio Network. We're back on Canucks Central. It's Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah here in the Kintec studio as the Canucks will get the Vegas Golden Knights tonight. Just listening in and some of the things Rick Tocchet was mentioning ahead of his team's matchup with the Vegas Golden Knights. Again, if you missed the news, it will be Nils Höglander and Max Sasson out of the lineup for Vancouver tonight. Phil DiGiuseppe and Linus Karlsson will go in for Vancouver. Also, Derek Forbert coming in on defense. Eric Brandstrom will sit this one out. He was the low man again on defense at just 11 minutes last night against Utah. So a few changes. Kevin Lankinen, the starter in net for Vancouver against Vegas. Tough one on the second half of a back-to-back. We're in the Kintec studio. Let's bring in our next guest. It is Scott Wheeler from The Athletic. Had a recent piece on Canucks prospect Sawyer Mineau being a part of Team Canada's World Junior Championship roster. Thanks for this, Scott. How are you?
I'm doing well. Just watching the pre-tournament game here and getting ready for the main thing in a few days. Looking forward to getting out to Ottawa.
Yeah, always a fun time of year with the World Junior Championship just around the corner. And the Canucks don't have a ton of prospects in the tournament, but a couple of big ones on defense. Let's start on Sawyer Mineau, who you had written about over at The Athletic recently. And now this is a guy that the organization has glowed about quietly for the last little while and publicly through training camp as well. And, you know, when he was drafted in the third round, you know, you don't always expect that guy to develop into a World Junior Championship defenseman, but here he is today. What's been the big thing for Sawyer Mineau?
Well, first of all, he's a great story. He's one of the better stories sort of coming out of those pandemic seasons. Played on a very, very deep team in Seattle, and as a result, through his first 2 seasons in the WHL, on one hand, he got to go to back-to-back WHL finals and win a WHL title and go to a Memorial Cup. And on the other hand, he was playing behind Nolan Allen and Jeremy Hansel and Kevin Korchinski and Samuel Knazko. And you go down the list, he was playing on a very, very deep blue line and often sort of the number 5 guy on that championship team in his draft year. And as a result, didn't really get the shine of maybe a first or second round talent, didn't play on the power play in his draft year like most sort of high-end picks coming out of the WHL do. and just sort of flew under the radar a little bit, if you will. But in speaking with both people in Seattle, I spoke with both the general manager and head coach in Seattle over the last couple of weeks about him as I prepped that feature on him, and then got Al Murray, the head scout and former director of amateur scouting with the Tampa Bay Lightning, current head scout for Hockey Canada for this World Juniors team, on the phone. And Al was quick to say that he believes he's the most improved player in the last 2 years in junior hockey. He's emerged as a two-way force at that level. He's a top player on a poor team. He's a co-captain with the Seattle Thunderbirds now, and just plays big minutes, two-way guy. He now runs their power play. He had 16 goals last year in his post-draft season. He's now over a point per game in his sort of final year of junior hockey, if you will, here as a 19-year-old. And all expectations are that he'll be in Abbotsford in the spring once Seattle's season is done. He may get traded at some point between now and then. The Thunderbirds are sort of in a different phase now after those two runs to the WHL final and a bit of a rebuilding team. So it's not out of the question that he gets dealt here at some point in the next month or so before the WHL trade deadline. But if he doesn't, Seattle should be a quick exit in the WHL playoffs, if they even make the WHL playoffs. And then he should be sort of on his way to the AHL and beginning his pro career. Really, really good skater. Great kid. Plays with sort of a competitive edge. Kind of plays on the line a little bit, actually, in the WHL these days in terms of his chippiness and his physicality. Not a big, strong, hulking kid. He's about 6 foot, 6 foot one, 180, 190 pounds kind of thing. But skates really well, plays tight gaps, defends really well, and then with his feet and his mobility, can also transport and move pucks. So just projects as kind of a two-way type, and you hope that he can become a depth option for the Canucks somewhere down the line, and that would be good value out of the third round.
Well, you mentioned how competitive he is, and he has a little bit of an edge to him, and not to oversimplify things, but oftentimes the difference in getting a guy like that to the league is having that competitiveness.
Big time, big time. And you pair that competitiveness with the skating, and that's what teams are looking for in NHL defensemen these days. Certainly, we saw it with the way that the St. Louis Blues were built on the back end when they won their cup, and the way that the Vegas Golden Knights were built, and certainly the way that the Florida Panthers were built. And even, Tampa did theirs a little bit differently with guys like Chernak and that kind of a thing. But the name of the game in terms of scouting defensemen over the last 5 to 10 years has really become about mobility and sort of two-way value. I think teams are less and less concerned about sort of going after the dynamic high-end skill types. They're less and less concerned about getting the brawny bruising types, and they're just trying to find guys who can defend in all three zones, who can sort of play with pace, who can skate, and then the forwards are certainly getting more skilled and maybe taking on a little bit of a different shape in terms of NHL draft targets. I do think that the league is getting actually a little bit smaller up front, but on the back end, the premium these days is that skating and that competitiveness piece, and Sawyer's got both of those, which should give him at least a chance to sort of make it out of the AHL and someday play NHL games.
What kind of a role do you see him playing here on Team Canada?
Well, he's kind of positioned himself as the second or third left shot defenseman on this team, and that's saying something on a team that has a returnee in Tanner Molendijk, who I would argue is the best defenseman in the CHL this season on the left side, and then also has a potential first overall pick in Matthew Schaefer in the upcoming draft on the left side, and then Sam Dickinson, a recent high pick, almost the top 10 pick, just outside the top 10 to the San Jose Sharks. So the fact that he's sort of firmly entrenched himself on that left side, they also have Caden Price, another lefty. They brought 5 of their 8 defensemen are lefties. But Sawyer feels like he's going to be, if not a second pairing guy, then it's certainly the third pairing lefty. They really like him. They like what he brings. They think he brings something a little bit different than some of their other guys. He doesn't have to be on a power play. He doesn't have to be getting a ton of puck touches. He kind of has a more of a B game than some of their other defensemen, if you will. And I think that gives him value at this level. So I expect him to play 17, 18 minutes a night. He's not going to be the guy on that blue line or even the second or third guy on that blue line, but he looks like he might be the fourth or fifth guy on that blue line.
Like Reach mentioned, there is one more Canucks prospect, not a long list of Canucks prospects at this tournament, but their seventh round pick of this past year, this past summer, was Basil Sanson, the Swiss player who made Team Swiss. What do you make of the way he's played? I mean, not very prolific this year, right? Only 3 points in the queue for Rimouski, but obviously Switzerland's level of talent is not at where Canada is. What do you make of the Swiss team in general?
Well, the Swiss team they're in tough. We're a long way from the Timo Meier, Nico Hischier days. This team it doesn't have that sort of age group and hasn't had that sort of age group for a while. They're built stronger on the back end than they are up front. He's obviously a part of that, but they have, I believe, four drafted players on the back end, including a couple of second and third round picks, that kind of a thing. They'll be a competitive team on the blue line. They've got some length. They've got a few sort of smaller skilled guys who went undrafted last year. Jamiro Reber comes to mind. There are a couple of guys up front that were at least in consideration to be picks and camp invites and that kind of a thing. But this is a team that I think is just playing to get into the quarterfinals and avoid the relegation round. I think that's the expectation for this Swiss team. Basile will be a part of their blue line, but not a leading part of it. He was a good player for them at U18 Worlds, but not a top player for them at U18 Worlds. And a lot like Sawyer, I think he kind of fits in that 4 or 5 slot on their blue line in terms of what you'll see and usage and all of that. So obviously Tom Wallander is the other big yeah. one with the Swedes as well. And Tom's going to play I would expect more of a shutdown role for the Swedes in this event. Him and Theo Lindstein played a shutdown role for them at U18 Worlds. And I could see that pair being reunited as kind of one of the two top four pairs for the Swedes. But a little bit lighter on content for the Canucks, and that's just a byproduct of them trying to be better and them drafting a little bit later. And there were a couple of others who were in the mix. Melvin Fernstrom was invited to the World Junior Summer Showcase for the Swedes, but as an 18-year-old, just didn't quite play himself onto the team. I expect that he'll be a part of the Swedish team that plays in Minnesota in 2026 next year as a 19-year-old. Anthony Romani was invited to the World Junior Summer Showcase for Canada after his 100-point year in the OHL last year, but just didn't seem to have the pace that they were looking for and the style of play that they were looking for, and wasn't invited to the selection camp. So some other guys who were kind of in the mix for some teams, but it is a little bit of a lighter tournament in terms of the quality of the contingent from Vancouver, if you will.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought Vilander, because as soon as I said that, Reach looked at me like an idiot. He's like, what's wrong with you? And Vilander is like their best prospect. I'm like, yeah, right, I gapped on it.
Yeah, it's okay. We can we can forget that ever happened. Maybe it's
probably not.
It's potentially possible.
People don't forget.
There's nobody on the text line calling you out for it yet. So
just wait.
But you know, Willander is an interesting guy, right? Like when he was taken 11th overall, Scott. You know, there was a big discussion amongst the fan base and here on our radio station. You know, did they make the right pick? There was guys like Zach Benson and others that were being mm-hmm. discussed in that spot for Vancouver, but they chose to go with the right shot defenseman. How have you seen his development? It seems like he's taken another step this year in the college game. Where do you see his game and how he's progressed here since his draft day?
Well, it was interesting watching him sort of crescendo right at the right time in his draft year, right? He was a real, real standout at U18 Worlds on that pairing with Theo Lindstein that I just talked about. They really locked the American, the sort of top American lineup of Will Smith, Gabe Perreault, and Ryan Leonard. They came within a shot away from upsetting the Americans and winning gold at that tournament. And the pairing of Lindstein and Wallander was, if not the biggest part of that, then certainly one of the two or three biggest reasons for that. And then he came out of that and he makes the jump over to BU and he plays his post-draft season at the college hockey level. And I thought he was good, but not great, maybe even a little bit less than good. I thought he kind of just had an okay year for a player of his caliber drafted where he was. On the stat sheet, he had a respectable season at BU as a freshman last year, but you tune into their games and I would often just want to see a little bit more out of him, a little bit more ambition on the puck. For a guy whose strength and bread and butter coming out of his draft year was sort of his lockdown rush defense. I saw him get turned around and beat one-on-one a couple of times in viewings last year, and just never really looked like an excellent college player as a freshman, while still being a good player on a good team and a serviceable two-way defenseman and productive enough and all of that. It wasn't like he had a bad year. So I don't want it to be perceived that way, but just maybe didn't take a major step forward. And this year, I think he's been really, really strong. He sort of fits in more naturally there. Lane Hutson has moved on. Lane Hudson's younger brother, Cole, has kind of assumed that power play offensive defenseman role, but Cole doesn't have the chops that Lane did in terms of the minutes that Lane was playing. And as a result, they've relied more on Willander to be a top end guy for them. They also lost Cade Weber, who signed with the Toronto Maple Leafs coming out of last year, and lost another defenseman to the transfer portal. And it just has kind of become more his, not his team, but maybe his blue line, if you will. And he's looked really good. So I'm excited to see what Willander looks like at this year's World Juniors. I think Sweden really has a three-headed monster of Axel Sandin, Pelikka, Theo Lindstein, and Tom Willander. And those three D are as strong as any team's top three D in this tournament. I think give the Swedes a real chance to challenge a USA or a Canada in a semifinal or even in a gold medal game if they get that far. I have a lot of respect for this Swedish age group, and they've played quite well over the years together. So Willander's going to be a big, big part of that. And then he'll have a decision to make in the spring. I would probably argue in favor of him going back for a third year at BU rather than turning pro. But with his athleticism and the way that he's built, he looks like a pro already. And then the skating and the length and his ability to defend with his feet in particular is pretty impressive. So if he were to turn pro and play some AHL games in the spring kind of thing, I don't think that would be the worst decision in the world, if you will, but does still feel like he's maybe half a step, and not half a step in terms of skating, but half a step in terms of development away from really making that jump emphatically.
Yeah, and I'm so glad you got to that side of his game, because he's super interesting, right? I loved him in his draft year, and I'm very high on what he can do for the team. But there's always, you know, impatience sometimes from a Canadian market to get a guy here as soon as possible, and that has kind of gone wrong for the Canucks outside of their obvious young talent that have come in and been spectacular right away. But usually these guys, you know, it takes a few years, especially for defensemen. And if he has to spend a full year in Abbotsford next season, there's nothing wrong with that, right?
No, not at all. And he's on the younger side too. He sort of was a later birthday in his draft year, so he's still a youngish 19. So yeah, absolutely. I don't believe that there should be any rush with Tom.
Scott Wheeler, our guest here on Canucks Central, as we look ahead to the World Junior Championship. So obviously, last year was a disappointment for Canada, not being amongst the medals, and it's always strange for Canada to have that sort of happen. How do you feel this team is set up this year for success? And some of the roster decisions I know were definitely debated quite a bit, but what do you make of this roster and how it sets up here ahead of this tournament?
Well, I think this is a better team than last year's. Last year's team was really undone by not getting a ton of guys back from the World Junior or from the NHL. And I'm not talking about Connor Bedard. I'm talking more about even Kevin Kurchinski. You go down the list. There were three or four players that were withheld from last year's team that could have made a difference. And then on top of that, they had Tanner Mullendyke go down with an injury. They had Tristan Luno go down with an injury. Matt Poitra came back from the NHL and played some of the worst hockey that I've seen him play in the last few years. Matt Savoy couldn't make the kind of impact he was hoping to make. Jordan Dumais played injured last year. It was just sort of this concoction of things and this melting pot of sort of bad outcomes for Hockey Canada. I don't think we'll see that play out this year, in part because the opposing teams that they're up against are also a little bit weaker, but in part because this Canadian roster is just deeper than a year ago. I think this Canadian roster is, and frankly, they're only missing Celebrini, Bedard, and Benson. So they're only three guys short this year, which is good for Hockey Canada. But this group is just deep from top to bottom. I think that's the calling card of this group and is going to have to be the calling card of this group over the course of the tournament. They've got four legit forward lines of talent. There isn't really a weak spot on the roster. I like their blue line and the length and skating and mobility of their blue line. They've got three goalies who I think can win and play in a big moment for this team potentially, and that feels, as it has been in recent years, sort of wide open. Although Canada actually, for all the talk of Canadian goaltending, Canada has had very good performances from their goalies in recent years at this tournament, going back to Joel Hofer and Devin Levi, and they've had some really nice runs here. This team feels really strong in terms of depth on paper. The deepest team, the only worry I have about this team is when you look at the roster, I wonder who's the guy. We've been spoiled last year, obviously, with Celebrini and the way he played. It was not his fault, certainly, that they lost in the quarterfinals. Celebrini was outstanding in that tournament as a draft-eligible player and a young draft-eligible player with his birthday. And then, obviously, the two tournaments before that in Halifax and in Edmonton, we were spoiled by not just Connor Bedard, but they had high-end guys. They had Kent Johnson, Logan Stankoven, Mason McTavish, some players who came through where you could look at them, Dylan Gunther, Shane Wright, you could look at them and say, these are going to be the guys on this team. These guys are going to carry the mail for this team. This year's group, I'm not sure they have that. I really like Callum Ritchie. I really like Bradley Nadeau. I really like their trio of underage kids in Porter Martone, Matthew Schaefer, and Gavin McKenna. But they don't have a number one player. They don't have a player that I look at and think that kid is probably going to be the top forward in the tournament, or that kid's going to be the top defenseman in the tournament. I think Tanner Molendijk has a chance to be the top defenseman in the tournament, but he's up against pretty stiff competition with a player like Ziv Boyum with the Americans or Axel Sandin Pelikka with the Swedes. And then up front, I look at the Americans and think, boy, oh boy, is there a single Canadian player who's going to do the kind of damage that Ryan Leonard and Gabe Perreault and James Haggins are capable of doing at this level? Is there a goalie on Team Canada that can steal a game like Trey Augustine could for the Americans? So I think that's a fascinating matchup come New Year's Eve. I think Canada and the U.S. are the two best teams on paper in this tournament. I think the Swedes are a firm third. It's a weaker age group for the Slovaks and the Czechs and the Finns than we've seen in recent years. Obviously, the Czechs have medaled in three straight tournaments here and had a great run. I think they'd be a surprise medal this year. They weren't a surprise medal in either of those three previous tournaments. But Canada and USA is an interesting matchup because I think at the top end, if you were to take the four or five best players on USA, I think it's a better core. And I think those guys are going to play a lot, 25, 30 minutes a night when the chips are on the table. Canada doesn't maybe have those four or five guys that you look at and think these guys are going to light up this tournament. But I think on depth, Canada is a deeper team. And that's without even mentioning Carson Rakoff as a returnee and Braden Jaeger as a returnee and Berkeley Catton, who I'm a big, big fan of. This is a very deep Canadian team. I mean, we're watching the pre-tournament game as we speak here, and Sam Dickinson is a healthy scratch. Sam Dickinson is one of the top young D prospects in the sport, and he's a healthy scratch for Team Canada tonight. And Gavin McKenna is lining up as the 13th forward. So all of that's fluid. I expect that McKenna is going to have some big moments in this tournament and be a top player for this team. But there isn't that guy on day one of pre-tournament that you look at and think that guy's going to win this team a gold medal and carry them. So that's what they're going to have to figure out is this who are the two or three go-to guys in crunch time for this Team Canada.
You brought up the goaltending, and in light of the Four Nations team for Canada and the goaltending not looking like the weaker spot, relatively speaking, for our country moving forward, do you feel like when it comes to our pipeline, whether it's in this tournament or coming up behind them, that there are elite goaltenders coming?
There are certainly some very, very good goalie prospects coming. Jack Ivankovic, who's probably going to be the third goalie on this Team Canada, is a draft-eligible goalie, which is first and foremost extremely rare for a draft-eligible goalie to represent Team Canada at the World Juniors. Jack has won at every level. He stole games at the Hlinka Gretzky Cup. He stole games at U17 Worlds. He was a first-round pick into the OHL. Jack is a legit high-end goalie prospect. The top two goalies drafted in the upcoming 2025 draft are likely both to be Canadians in Jack Ivankovic, who I just mentioned, and Joshua Ravensbergen, who was invited to the World Junior Summer Showcase for Team Canada and would have been their fifth or sixth goalie if they were sort of to run it a little bit deeper this year and has a real chance to be one of the three goalies for next year. Very sort of legit prospect, 6'5", excellent track record in the WHL over the last season and a bit here, has really emerged after going undrafted into the WHL to become a top prospect. Sebastian Kosa is one of the best young goalies in the AHL and having a tremendous season with the Grand Rapids Griffins and could be a big part of the future of the Detroit Red Wings. Obviously, Joel Hoffer is a good young goalie. Devin Levi is still sort of figuring it out, but I think Devin will figure it out and become a very good goalie in the NHL. So there are some good young Canadian goalies coming, but we are still certainly on the flip side of that, we're not talking about where we were 10 years ago with Roberto Luongo and Carey Price, and even before that, Marty Brodeur and Marty Turco, and you go down the list. So Marc-Andre Fleury, it's not in that shape, and it won't be, I don't think, for some time. So it's still coming, but I do think there's the grass is greener. I don't think we're going to be having Sam Montembeau start for Team Canada at future major international events kind of thing. Like, I think you'll feel a little bit better about it in the next 5, 6, 7 years.
He is a national reporter at The Athletic covering the NHL draft and prospects. Scott, we really appreciate your time. We'll be following through the course of the tournament. Thanks for this and happy holidays.
Cheers, guys. Looking forward to it. Can't wait.
There he is. At Scott C. Wheeler is where you can follow him on Twitter as well. Some good thoughts there on Vilander, and we got a pretty good text on it. Sat's already traded Vilander for top 4D.
Justin and CR. No, I don't want to trade one of my children.
Sat was like among the biggest proponents of drafting Vilander. Like, I remember on draft night being in the studio, and as Vilander's name was still on the board when the Canucks got onto the clock, Sat was kind of giddy. If we're being honest about it.
I was pretty excited.
Yeah.
I mean, I was talking about him back in, you know, like it was in December and January of that year. It's just funny how it all worked out, because he was like, we'd like defense.
I really like this Vilander guy.
He can defend, right? And he's fast.
Yeah. And he was coming along. And, you know, last year we saw Jonathan Lekkomäki be the star of the tournament for Team Sweden. Could Vilander be that guy this year? Maybe a bit of a stretch to see a defenseman do that kind of a thing, but he'll be one to watch. And obviously Sawyer Mignot, who's been one of the, you know, biggest stars of the Canucks prospect pool over the last couple of years.
Is he this year's Hunter Brustevich?
Yeah, maybe.
Where, like, you know, kind of third round pick, makes a big jump.
Yep.
You know, is gaining lots of notoriety.
Could happen. I mean, he's getting to the point now where, you know, if he has a strong tournament, how much has he increased his value as a prospect? And does that help the Canucks land a top four defenseman a little bit better? Can he be that piece, or can he be a piece that helps the Canucks long term? That's part of the discussion. Coming up, we're going to get more into the pre-game show. Thoughts on the Canucks lineup decisions. You'll hear from Rick Tocchet ahead of puck drop with the Vegas Golden Knights. And more on what makes the Canucks' defensive game successful. We didn't see it enough last night against Utah. Will they get back to it tonight against Vegas, like we saw it against Florida and Colorado recently? That's coming up next on Canucks Central.
We are your home.